to the Radio Life Sciences Podcast for a behind-the-scenes look into GSLS, made by students and educators for the scientists of tomorrow.
Hi, welcome back everybody to another episode of Radio Life Sciences with our education. My name is Gisella, and I am here with our regular co-host.
Hi, I'm Marke.
And today we have two guests who are willing to talk to us about a new education form, which is called Het Vlak, or the square, as I've translated it. But our guest is nodding. So we would like to introduce to you Sigrid Merks and Maaike Balemans. Sigrid, would you like to introduce yourself?
Yes, hi, thanks. My name is Sigrid Merks. I'm working at Utrecht University at the Department of Media and Culture Studies, which is part of the Faculty of the Humanities. And there I'm currently working as the Director of Education. But the reason that I'm here today is that I'm part of a larger educational innovation project called Fostering an Open Mind and Open Attitude. And I'm part of the team that is developing all kinds of methods to foster dialogue, and Het Vlak, the square, as you called it, is one element of that.
Thank you very much. And Maaike, would you also like to introduce yourself, please?
Yeah, sure. I'm Maaike. I'm almost finished with my neuroscience and cognition master, and I did the life science and society minor the past year. So that's how I got in touch with the square, because we did it as part of our minor.
Thank you.
Yeah, welcome also on my behalf. First question for you, Sigrid. What is the square? What is Het Vlak?
Yeah, that's a very important question because it's a bit of an abstract title. Het Vlak, the square, is a dialogue form, an art-based dialogue form, where people have a conversation about a complex issue or topic with the help of objects that they place on literally a square on the floor to visualize everything that plays a role or part in that complex issue. And by standing around that square and looking at how the objects relate to each other, you try to understand together what is going on in this particular problem. And so people who participate are asked to pick up objects. And they represent something that is part of that problem, and they place it on the square. And it both matters which object they choose. So they choose it because it reminds them of something that is related to the problem. That's often something that is associative or symbolic. And also the position where they place it on the square matters, because with that they try to say something about the kind of role they think it plays in that problem.
Okay. And what kind of objects should I think about?
Yeah, it's those are very diverse. They have like different forms and shapes and materials. There is a stone, there is a rope, there is something from glass, wood. What we try to avoid is that they are like objects that are too easily associated with a certain... So let's say we will not put a heart there, mm-hmm, or a flower. So it's more like things that are very open to different meanings, where people can really project their own idea on that object.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And how do you start then when you have such a dialogue? Do you start with a question and then people interact with each other and the objects? Or
first we start with a brief explanation of the format itself, so explaining what we expect from people. Then we introduce the topic of that conversation, and we often do that in the form of a case, so to make it concrete with an example. And then we ask a very important question to everyone, like, okay, so now you know what the form is about, you know what we're going to talk about, do you want to join? So for us, it's very important that there is also really an opportunity to say no, I don't want to talk about this. And also by asking, you in a way also ask everyone to have a shared responsibility for the conversation that is going to happen, because it's really a joint effort to build that conversation. And so after all that has been said and everyone has expressed if they wish to participate or not, then we start. And that always starts by asking someone, for example, Maaike, could you please choose one of these objects that for you stands for, let's say, society, and place it on the square? And then we take it from there and we ask other people to add more objects. And that is how we start building the whole system that is part of the topic that we're discussing.
Interesting way of approaching this. And you also said that it is mainly for complex topics. Is that also the goal, to be able to discuss complex items that you would not be easily discussing with others in another way?
Yeah, absolutely. So as I said briefly, like this forum was developed in the context of a larger innovation project called Fostering an Open Mind and Open Attitude. And that project really started from the observation that somehow it seems to become more and more difficult to have open discussions about sensitive topics. And that also in higher education, we experience how the polarization that is taking place in society also manifests in our classrooms. And that people find it more and more difficult to talk openly and candidly and from a personal point of view about sensitive topics, also because they're sometimes afraid of how others will respond. So we have tried to create a forum that helps people to do that, to also create the, let's say, the safe space to have these kind of conversations. And there are all kinds of elements in place in that forum to make sure that you can have that open discussion, even if it is difficult.
Yeah, so I'm the coordinator of the Life Sciences and Society Profile, so I'm here with two hats on as a host and teacher. And I actually asked Sigrid if it would be possible to do the square within Life Sciences and Society, because I thought it was important for when we're discussing the connection between science and society, that we as scientists also are able to have these open conversations, especially with members of society who are maybe not in our scientific community, so that we can take that perspective along in our work. And I think it's important that if we want to achieve this as scientists, that we are also able to teach our students these skills. So we actually did it as a pilot to see if it was also a good fit in the profile. And it's not a form of perspective taking, but I think for me as a teacher, because I participated as well, it did bring me new perspectives. And I really hoped for our students that they would experience that as well. So yeah, that was the reason to incorporate it this year.
It's interesting what you say that you participated as a teacher, because this is indeed also part of the forum. And we also noticed that this is really something that is new for teachers, the idea that they all of a sudden become part of the the group. And in a way, we are erasing, that's never really possible, but in a way we are erasing the hierarchical relation between a teacher and the students. So we all know something, and it is thinking together and taking the time together to ponder about difficult topics, which really lies at the heart of this forum. So it also wouldn't make sense to have either the teacher standing outside of that or to be the one who holds all knowledge, which is also not true. So it's it's a very democratic forum in that respect.
Yeah. And so you have a conversation leader outside the group that's using the dialogue.
Yeah, that's indeed important to mention. There is a moderator who makes sure that not only the topic is introduced and the form is introduced, but who also during the conversation makes sure that everybody gets a turn. because very unlike debates, that's also maybe important to say, this format also means to move away from having debates where you have to bring in arguments or where you have to take a certain position. This is really nothing about that. It's like exploring together, why is this so complex? What different things are playing a role here? And can we look at that together? Yeah, so the moderator makes sure everyone gets a turn, but is also reading the room in terms of what is happening emotionally. Because with these kind of topics, some people are also very personally invested and can also become sometimes difficult to discuss certain things. So you're also making sure to see, okay, what is going on? Is everyone okay? And after the conversation, there's always like an after moment where we sit together to reflect and look back on, okay, what happened during this conversation?
Yeah, it sounds like you have to show also a vulnerable side of you as a person, I guess. And then you need a safe space to do so.
I think that is true. Maybe Maaike can say more about it from her perspective of participating. I wouldn't say that you have to be vulnerable, mm-hmm. because it's not something that we demand. I think it would also be very wrong to ask that upfront from people. But we do hope, and we also see sometimes it doesn't always succeed, but that we manage to create the conditions within which it becomes possible to be more vulnerable, because there is no judgment happening, and the form really fosters very attentive listening. So people are really very actively and intensely listening to each other, and somehow that installs a kind of atmosphere where people are also not interrupting each other, but just listening, looking, and then responding. Because when you see someone putting something on the square and explaining why you do that or why you think that is relevant for what we are discussing, then you immediately start thinking yourself, I would have never picked that object, or, I never looked at it from this point of view. And this is constantly going on in your mind, which really creates a kind of atmosphere. We're thinking together here.
Yeah, it triggers an internal response as well for people. Yeah.
At least for me it does. I'm curious to hear from Maaike and Gisela if that's the case. But
yeah,
Maaike, maybe you want to share what your experience was with this dialogue form. What did you take away from it? What did you think about it?
I think a lot was said just now, so I need to think about what I think from my perspective. It was kind of obvious what the goal was with taking in different perspectives. I really liked about it that what you just said with someone picking something up and explaining why they put it there, that really helped me, because sometimes I saw an object and I was like, when you asked the question, I was like, yeah, that's the only possible interpretation for me right now. I can't imagine what other interpretation you might, how do you say that?
Have
on this. And then someone went ahead and picked a different object and explained why. And I was like, oh, yeah, that actually makes a lot of sense. I do think it helped that we knew each other already a bit, because the group was from the minor, so we already had spent, 2-3 months together. And especially the responding part was lacking a bit for us, I think, which is why that we already knew each other was nice, because then if someone explains something, I already knew the person a bit, so I can understand a bit better what they mean, whilst when someone explained it and I would not know this person, I would need a bit more context to it. And we really had to get adjusted to the form, so the responding part and the part where you ask questions like, okay, but why do you think this? I think that if that would have been a bit more, we could have learned more from each other.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting. It's you say a lot of things that I think are worth responding to. First of all, like, is it important that you already know each other? I definitely recognize that it makes a difference if you do or not. We also did the form with people who have never met before, and then it also still works, but it's indeed very different. We do envision it as a method that you can practice. So not as a one-off, which also is possible, but indeed acknowledging that it takes time to get to know each other and to build trust, to really deep dive into difficult stuff. And then it would mean that you have to do it more often. Because indeed, when you do it for the very first time and you haven't encountered the form before, there are many things to get used to and to adjust to.
And I think for everybody, and for me included, we had to adjust to the fact that we were not having a debate and we were not bringing in arguments.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And also, I think most of us were very direct and down-to-earth people. So the moment you ask us, like, okay, what object do you associate with society? Then most of us are just like, it's a ruler and a ping pong ball. Like, what do you mean?
Yeah, I remember that. That was also, we have done this form in many different contexts, mm-hmm. also different parts within the university. And it's very clear that, I mean, it's not that one directional, but like that there are different disciplinary differences in how students and people work with this form. So this indeed really touches on this like symbolic level, like what do you associate something with? And indeed, sometimes students were just staring at us like blank face,
what
like,
do
what do you mean? stands for what? We also are still very much looking and trying out, like, how do we need to change introductions depending on where we are and with whom we are working. But I also find these differences actually highly valuable. Because it's just another way of relating, but not a matter of not relating, I would say. And what did you mean, Maaike, when you said, like, we probably needed more context? Do you remember what that was lacking?
Mainly that if someone explains something, I know from certain persons that if they say something, they mean it a certain way. So you have more context on the person, how they talk, what kind of expressions is that the word they use and how they actually mean it. So for example, if they say something a certain way, then I know that person and I know that it's not hurtful or whatever. Not that anyone said something hurtful, but it's just an example. Like I know the person, I know how they talk, I know what they mean.
It's interesting because the this is also something that we're trying out. One of the very important roles of the moderator is to paraphrase. So I didn't mention that, but it's good that you bring it up. The moment that someone picks up an object and puts it in the constellation on the square, we ask them, or we usually ask them, so why did you pick this object and why did you put it here? And then a recurring question is, and what do you see now? Like, what do you see now you're looking at the square? And then someone responds, and then typically the moderator would paraphrase that, which in a way seems like unnecessary because someone already said something, but it's meant as a way to reaffirm, first of all, what the other person has been saying, but also, this sounds maybe a bit strange, but to take the words away from the person so that it doesn't remain personal, mm-hmm. but that it becomes part of the larger conversation. And this is also what I sometimes hear, is that for people it's actually very important to hear back that someone has heard, can indicate, I have heard what you said, and then makes it part of the whole fabrication of the talk you're having. But sometimes that is too much, and then the form becomes so slow that some people, they lose interest. But if you do it too little, then you have not the real problem, but as you said, Maaike, like, then it really depends on how do people interpret what the other one is saying.
Yeah, so it's also a way to check, did we understand you correctly?
Yeah, and this now we sometimes also actually say more explicitly like that. So yeah. If I'm correct or if I've heard you well, then yeah.
And Maike, I'm curious, were there any things that you specifically learned during this exercise or that you think, oh, this is valuable for me in the future? Or maybe not, that's also allowed.
Well, not on the topic specifically. I think ours was about vaccines or vaccination program in the Netherlands. I don't think I learned something on the topic specifically, but it was just a very good form to realize there are different perspectives, which typically you would want to know that. But it was just a good reminder that there are many interpretations possible aside from your own or the ones that are in your environment. And I don't know if you, Sigrid, also saw that dynamic in our group, but there were a few people who were at some point very into the form and some people who were a bit like, I don't really know what this brings me. So I do think that you need a certain willingness or openness to actually hear other people's perspectives, while if you are in a bubble, I think it's very hard for people to actually get the essence of what someone with a different perspective is saying. So even with this form, I don't know if it's really, if people are really polarized, if that's really the slow form is really helpful.
I understand your question. I mean, clearly it's not a medicine. It's not like, okay, if you do this form, now we all start understanding and loving each other and yay.
So would no, be it's great.
Yeah, that would be really great, but unfortunately it doesn't work like that. I also noticed that like some people are more open and willing to engage with this form than others. But I also very much believe in that it is valuable to have this experience anyway. Also when it doesn't resonate. And actually, I always very much like the conversations afterwards where I find it as important that there are students who are trying to explain why they didn't think it was interesting or they didn't think it worked. Because then I think, well, actually, you're already talking about it. You are already thinking and reflecting on what you expect from a conversation or not. So for me, that is also already valuable. And yeah, I think that's what I wanted to say. So for me, it's not that we have aims, but the aim is not necessarily like after this conversation, you are better able to relate to. I think what we want is to provide participants with an experience where they either in a positive or maybe a bit more disturbed way, experience what happens when you talk in such a way, and also to reflect on how that differs from many other modes of conversations that we typically employ in a university context. And then still, yeah, some might have preferences for one or the other, but I do hope that a kind of seed is planted.
Yeah, definitely.
I remember one student specifically who very honestly said at the end in the reflection, this was not for me. I would have rather spent these 2 hours working on my assignment. But during the exercise, they really did participate very actively.
So, very invested. And yeah. Actually, I have never experienced, I think we have done it now 15 times, very different contexts. No one was ever really disengaged. And so also experiences like, oh my God, this is slow, or those are actually also very relevant and important emotions to have and to be able to feel. And I think that the form also really embraces discomfort, like what is this about? Or I don't understand what this is. I'm not quite sure what I learn here. But to have those kind of sensations and to work through them is actually very important. And I think very often we aim at experiences that are smooth and seamless and things shouldn't be too difficult. That is not where learning takes place.
Yeah, and I think when you're out in the real world, you probably experience more discomfort than you would like, and these experiences could help you to master those skills to work through that.
Yeah, I totally agree, because we are often being trained to be in control, right? Mm-hmm. Knowing what we do, we have our knowledge, we have our skills.
I wish I was always in control.
Yeah, me too. So, but we do not very often in this context acknowledge that we are not in control, or that we do not know what is going to happen or what someone will bring in or how someone or something will make us feel. And I think it's very important to create space for that.
Yeah. And I'm just curious, because Sigrid, you mentioned that you've done this before, or that this form has taken place before, where one group does it several times. Maike, do you think that would have been something that would have been helpful? Would you have liked to see that rather than just one time a tryout?
Yeah, but maybe with a different topic. Because I think we had a very
broad
group, and we were just in a different, we were more on the society. We were just busy with different topics than the vaccination one. The vaccination one is just very old, and I think most of us felt like, we talked enough about that already. But I think there were certain topics for the minor that where it would make sense to have this conversation in this form more often.
I think that's a very important thing you bring in, because it only works if people feel a shared urgency to talk about a certain mm-hmm. topic.
Yeah.
So indeed, as soon as that is not the case, that will have an effect on the conversation. And I think we are also still trying to find out, like, what is the best way to decide on topics. So how we do it now is very often in direct consultation with the teacher, because we often appear in the context of a specific course, so we want to make sure that it relates to that. So it's not that we bring the cases, we ask the teacher for the cases. But we, and now you're saying that, Maike, and I'm thinking maybe we should try that more. Another opportunity, of course, would be to ask students to bring in the topic.
That's what I was thinking as well. So we're still making the tweaks for next year's Life Sciences and Society profile. So I'm already thinking, maybe we can do it a few times, and then maybe I can just ask the students what topics they would like to discuss and make it a little bit easier for them to invest or relate.
Yeah, and that would also probably help to create that context that you were referring to, because if you have already talked in advance about what do we want to talk about, what is worth discussing, what do we find difficult to talk about, then there is already a kind of investment that, and then you also start off in a very different way, I would say.
Yeah, because we also had a topic or a discussion in the minor that was not with this forum, but was more on how do we feel about the current state of the world. And with that discussion, you really felt like, okay, there are very different people from different backgrounds in the room. There are people who live in a very left-wing environment, and people who also have friends from back home who are more right-wing. And with the vaccination topic, we all came from like a biological, biomedical background. So most of us are just, and also don't have kids who, come in touch with parents with different views on this. So most of us were a bit like, yeah, go get vaccinated, you know. Not much controversy within our group. I think that vaccination topic would have been interesting if you have a group with people who have different views on it, but for us we just kind of on the same page there.
Yeah, I totally agree with you, like, and that is indeed a delicate balance. The group shouldn't be too heterogeneous. If too many people already have the same view, then indeed it's less likely that you will end up with very, very different perspectives.
Yeah.
And depending on the topic, it makes a group more heterogeneous or not, actually.
Exactly. So, yeah.
No, but I think it's interesting also what you say, because you didn't have kids, all of you, but I have kids. So for me, actually, it did bring me a really important insight during the conversation that I'm also very pro-vaccination. But during the conversation, one of the insights that I got was, oh, even if parents are not pro-vaccination, they still want what's best for their children. So the intentions are the same. And that was a really big realization for me personally.
Yeah, and sometimes these type of realizations do happen within this forum. And this I find actually the most valuable about that forum, that you start listening to the others and looking at the constellation, how it is taking shape, that all of the sudden you realize that, for example, how you thought about something from your knowledge or training or rationally, then is very different from how you feel about something actually on a much more emotional level. What maybe wasn't mentioned that much, but what I think is very important about the form is the role that the objects play. Because clearly there are many dialogue forms out there that are all seeking to have an open and respectful conversation and not really a debate. But what I found particularly interesting about this form is that it's because you're talking through and with the objects, that also creates a very different way of talking to each other. Because in a weird way, it is as if you're talking via the object. So normally you are in a group and you're looking around and you're looking each other into the eyes. But here everyone is focused on the square and you're looking at the objects that are being placed and replaced and so on. And then it makes it somehow safer to speak because you're never addressing someone directly. So there's never a moment that you say, oh, you think that and I think this. But you're talking with and via the objects, which makes it a bit more distanced.
That distance maybe gives you more overview of the whole situation and gives you the possibility to look at it in a different way.
I also formulate my opinion more easily if I don't see how people react to it. Because sometimes when you're saying, people are already making a face. And when I can focus on the object, I think it's, for me at least, easier to actually express what I want to say.
Yeah, for me, what really stands out in this form is that what we have heard a lot is that students that typically do not dare to speak in class or see themselves as quite shy or cautious in that respect, that they were very much surprised themselves about how much they said. And that also has to do with how the form creates time for everyone, because in a way you're taking turns and it's the moderator who decides who speaks and who makes sure that everyone gets a turn. So that I also find very valuable, because you don't have to fight for a moment to speak, and you can decide for yourself when you feel comfortable doing so.
Yeah, it sounds very respectful in all kinds of ways. And also, I think, I mean, for me as a Dutch person, it's a very natural thing to speak up and just give my opinion. But that's not the case for everyone. So there are a lot of differences between people. And maybe this is something that we as teachers also kind of demand from our students, but that's not the natural way that all students want to bring up things, and this sounds like a way that you can at least open the conversation and let everyone have a piece in that conversation, which is equal. So that it really triggers something for me as well, to think about ways how I could incorporate it as a teacher.
That's nice to hear. Yeah, maybe interesting to say is that, and I wanted also to make sure to mention that like this form is not new.
Mm-hmm.
So it already existed and it is developed by a dialogical art platform called Building Conversation, who have created a lot of different formats for alternative ways of having conversations together. And they, in turn, are inspired by all kinds of existing conversation practices coming from indigenous practices, but also different philosophies of communication. And this particular format is inspired by system work, like the psychological family constellation system work.
Yeah.
And that therapeutic form, in turn, was inspired by Zulu practices in South Africa. So I also like how these forms, they're not out of the blue here. They have developed over time in different contexts. And this organization, Building Conversation, I love that title because it makes so clear that a conversation is not just something that you have or that is all of a sudden there, but that you have to build it together and that it is a joint responsibility.
Yeah, yeah, cool. So as a teacher, what would you say would be the thing that you could get from this dialogue form? Which type of teachers or which type of teaching would fit with this dialogue form?
I think it's no coincidence that we're very often part of courses or programs that are looking for the link between the discipline and society. So I think that in a hardcore theoretical course that probably this form wouldn't make much sense. So there need to be topics that are urgent and sensitive, but also like teachers who want to invest in training their students how to be able to deal with different perspectives, deal with friction, deal with debate and unease. So that also, teachers that want to train their students to become good communicators and good listeners, I would say. So that makes sense in a context of medicine where people have to work with patients, or in the social sciences where people have to work with, in psychology, also with patients. Actually, there are many, many different places where this could work. But I think it does require a teacher who is also very open to trying out new forms and who is willing to create space within the program to do that. Because in a way, this is the most ridiculous format, looking at how our current climate is shaped. I mean, it doesn't fit well in time slots. It needs a space that is very particular. You need to clean your whole room out of with the tables and the chairs. So it really takes an effort. So this only really works when someone truly believes in the importance of training things like this.
Okay. So you need a certain amount of dedication and interest for this.
I would say that. Yeah. And maybe I sometimes think, yes, courses can work. But for me, maybe even a more suitable environment or logical context would be tutoring. Tutoring context where the groups are already smaller and where also people who are the students who are part of a tutor group, most of the time they see each other multiple times over the year or sometimes even more than 1 year. And then you can really start building something.
Yeah. Yeah, that was actually what I was thinking of as well in my own context.
So if there are still people who are willing to try this out in a tutor context, we are still waiting for people who would be happy to try that out.
Cool. Hey, we can tell our colleagues about this.
Yes,
definitely.
Please do so.
But also tell our listeners how they can reach out to you.
Yes. So there are many different ways to reach out. People can email me directly, which is s.merx@uu.nl. But we are also on the CUT website. There is a teaching and learning collection there where they can find materials about this particular form. So there's a kind of manual for teachers, like what does the form look like? How can you use it in your teaching? So that is definitely a place to go to, and that's also where you find our contact details. We are also regularly appearing at things like Het Onderwijs Festival, where we do workshops. And we also currently launched a moderator training because, yeah, now it's just us in the team who are doing all the sessions, and that is not sustainable for the longer term. And we also really hope to, yeah, get some people enthusiastic to become ambassadors in their own faculty or department. So we started a training a while ago. 8 people from very different contexts are now participating, and they are finishing soon, and they will receive this certificate that now they can moderate this format. And we will restart another series of trainings in fall. And we are also communicating about this in the newsletters from Het CAT, the UU newsletters, but also faculty newsletters.
And maybe important to mention, this is available for all faculty. So
for all faculty, not just academic staff.
And on the Science Park and in the city center.
Yeah, and at UMC as well. Yeah.
Cool. Well, I would almost say they cannot miss it if they keep their eyes open.
True.
So feel free to reach out to Sigrid and her colleagues. And our listeners didn't see it, but Gisella was like waving very happily when she mentioned the ambassador part. So I think you got one on board as well. Anything else that you want to share, Maaike or Sigrid, about the experience or the dialogue form?
No, I think I've said what I wanted to say. How about you, Maaike?
Yeah, me too, I guess. It was a very nice conversation to have. So I really hope that there are more people open to trying it.
Well, and for me as a teacher, it was the first time, but I definitely take away some lessons as well to be able to implement this better in the future. So thank you very much for your insight.
Yes.
And feedback.
Yeah, and thank you for making the time to join us today and inform our listeners.
Maybe just before we close, because we always start off with a question which we ask all of our guests, and we forgot to ask you, so I thought maybe we could just use it as our closing.
Oh, that's a good
one. I thought
one.
You were saving it till the end. I think this is how you normally do that.
No. This is very natural.
Huh? Yeah. So our listeners can experience that we don't do things perfectly all the time. Maaike, I'm curious, who was your most memorable teacher and why? And it can be from primary school all the way up to university.
Primary school too.
Sure, why not?
Okay, sure. Because I had a teacher back then, and I had her in group 4. Which one is that?
Second grade.
Like second grade. And she was very invested in class, and I had trouble reading. So she gave me extra material, and 2 years later I participated in like a contest, and she was I heard later on that she was super proud of me, and I just really liked her energy. Yeah. That really, even though it was secondary primary school.
Yeah.
Yeah, that really stuck with me.
Oh, that's really nice.
Cool.
And Sigrid, who was your most memorable teacher?
Yes, when you said that you were going to ask this question in advance, I think I haven't slept for a week. I always have a bit trouble, like, who's the most memorable this or that, also when it comes to music or sports or whatever. And the true answer is that it is really not just one person. So I have this mix of different experiences that all have been very valuable for me. Juffrouw Fox I think when I started school, preschool, who made me feel seen, which was very important. But then also a history teacher comes to mind who could tell beautiful stories and who told me how important it is to tell stories in class and not just share knowledge. Then there was a teacher who taught Dutch and who really challenged me to think out of the box. And I think mostly it's my colleagues that really inspire me. Just when I see how they do certain things in class, how they create such nice atmospheres within class, or how they are able to, in a very natural way, convey very complex matters. It's just that I'm constantly inspired by people around me, but it's not just one person who made a lasting impression. And then the final thought I had before coming here was my cat. I think that I learn a lot from my cat, and that has everything to do with how she is in life, like how she is in the moment, and how she can relax, like really relax and give herself fully over to whatever she's feeling, that I find truly inspiring.
I definitely understand that one.
Yeah.
I don't have a cat. I wouldn't.
Oh, no, I don't have a cat either. But just being inspired by that, I think, yeah, I would like to be able to do that as well.
Yeah. And relax like a cat. That also sounds good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very
cool. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
You're welcome.
Yeah, I think this is a nice way to end our podcast with actually the beginning question. But it also resonates with, having a dialogue with people, thinking about others, other perspectives, etc. So the circle is round again. Thank you all for being here, Sigrid, Maaike, Gisella as well, for sharing your perspectives on the dialogue form, the square.
And thank you, Marke, as well.
Yes. And of course, thank you for all our listeners. We will be back soon. And hope that you had a great listen to this podcast.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
Radio Life Sciences. Radio Life Sciences. Radio.
Welcome to the Radio Life Sciences podcast, for a behind-the-scenes look into GSLS, made by students and educators, for the scientists of tomorrow.